Okay, this hour, let's take your phone calls with Michael Bastien, the Algonquin Healer. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Michael Bastien. Michael, before we take some calls, why were the Native Americans so close to the land?
Well, the land is what actually supports and provides everything that we need to live in this life. And one of the questions that I ask routinely is, does the natural world need the human being? And it really doesn't. But the other part of the question is, does the human being need the natural world? Absolutely. Without that, this creation continuously providing everything that it does and acknowledging that, that's one of the areas in which they learned from examples and events that had happened to their people,
mm-hmm.
that if they didn't pay attention and they didn't acknowledge this miraculous creation that continuously restores and renews and provides an abundance for all of this life, then they knew that there would be problems. And actually, in the geological and historical, by their history, they have accounts of four different, what they refer to as, world changes. And they said the world changes would have occurred anyway, but some of them were actually started by or encouraged by the humans by not continuing to remember that it is their duty to interact with and acknowledge the greatness of this whole creation and how it works. So when they hand that information down to the next generation, that next generation understands that if we don't continue to honor these cycles, that they will become disruptive. If we can have everyone at least acknowledge that this is a way of interacting with and showing our gratitude towards the other life forms that are out there and saying, you know, this really is part of our responsibility, is to acknowledge at some point in time, even if you don't do it daily, but if you become routine with it,
mm-hmm.
you start to see events that will unfold and you will see things that will come into your life. And as you know, there are no such things as coincidence.
You've been listening, Michael.
All the time.
All right, let's take some calls. Luke is in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Go ahead, Luke. You're on with Michael Bastien.
Cool. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
When I was 11, just turning 11, I lived on Lake Seneca with my parents in the woods.
Yep.
And an experience I had there, which I never share hardly with anyone, happened to me. And I really believe that it was very shamanic and special, and I was in the woods a lot all the time. My parents got used to me always going off into the woods for hours or a whole day, and I would climb trees, and I talked to the animals, and I built an altar to nature. But one summer morning, I woke up early in our home, and we were only three houses out in the woods. There were three separate houses, and we were the middle house, and I had my two brothers were there, and I was almost 11, and I dreamt of a circle of snakes, about 100 snakes intertwined in a perfect circle. And in the dream, this was early in the morning, some of the snakes, in the dream, I approached the snakes in the woods in awe of them, and I walked up to them to look closely at the snakes. Some of them turned and looked at me, and I immediately woke up from the dream frightened. And it was about 6 in the morning, I think, or 6:30. It was about in June, I believe. And I was so amazed at my dream, I went down to the kitchen and made some sandwiches and decided to and put them in a little paper bag and decided to go in the woods to find the snakes. I knew, I just felt I was going to find those snakes. And I went in the woods for, oh, 3, 4, 5, perhaps 4 hours, maybe 5 hours, searching and searching all morning. And my parents were used to me getting off in the woods even in the morning and not coming back till late and later in the day. And it was a weekend because when I searched and searched in the woods and I came back, I don't know, it could have been any time. School was out. I was coming back this very sad that I couldn't find the snakes in my dream. And I was approaching the house in the clearing, and I was still in the woods, and there were the snakes, the exact snakes that I dreamt, in a circle. And as I approached, my jaw was, you know, just, oh, I was amazed, and but I was thrilled, but also, you know, in shock. But I walked up to them just as in my dream, and the same 3 or 4 snakes turned and looked right at me, and I ran to the house, frightened. Mm-hmm. And no one was home. They must have all gone off. It was summertime. And they were used to me being in the woods for hours, so they went off somewhere. And I ran up to my bedroom, jumped under my covers, shivering, for about a half hour, frightened. And then I said, I've got to go back and see them again. And I went to find them, and they were gone.
Yeah, that is actually a ritual that the snakes go through in the springtime. And there are many things that we can learn from by observing and watching what they do and how they interact. But your dream is directly connected to giving you an introduction or getting you acquainted with things that sometimes we're told are evil or scary and we shouldn't go near them. And we have a much different perception of handling and looking at those types of activities. But you did. You certainly had a great experience there. And for you to, I'm going to say almost not a dream. It's more of a vision. And if you continue to do activities in the woods, these things will actually show themselves to you.
Well, I want to.
Well, there he is.
Yeah. Okay. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I just wanted to say I eventually became a close friend of the Hopis and lived with the Hopis, and they adopted me as a son.
And, you know, when people demonstrate a certain nature and it is very compatible with the native philosophy of life, they are very willing to adopt people into their nation or into their communities. And it's because they want people to feel comfortable and to be around them because they've recognized that you hold certain elements that they need more people like you, and we all need more people like you to come forward and participate, because this is actually what we're moving into, is collectively getting as many people on board so that we can work as a group to address these issues and these things that have been neglected for way too long.
Let's go to Brad now in Syracuse, New York. You're up with us. Hi, Brad. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Michael. How you doing?
I'm good, Brad.
Great show. I have a question, but I was thinking about land management. If anybody wants to see what you're supposed to do when there's a flood, just study a beaver pond, because when it's dry out, they put the dam at one end of the pond. But when there's too much water, they'll also build a dam up at the other end of the pond. I have a beaver dam behind my pond behind my house, and it's just really relaxing watching that whole thing go on.
They're pretty good engineers, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They're amazing. But my question to you was, my favorite show of all time on television was Northern Exposure. And I just wanted to ask Michael if he thought that the whole, with the fellow that played Leonard, Graham Greene, who, by the way, when that man talks, I'm just drawn to him. If you ever wanted to have a spokesperson for what you want to convey, he's just absolutely the best. But I wanted to know if you thought they did a really good job depicting that whole, the whole spirit thing of the shamans and everything else. And by the way, if anybody's stressed out, go get some northern exposure and sit and watch a few of those things, because you'll feel a lot better afterwards. And I'll take my answer off the phone. Thank you, George. Thank you, Mark.
All right, great. You got it. What are your observations there, Michael?
Absolutely. Thank you for that observation, because most people don't see the finer points because they're looking at so many different images. They haven't been instructed, or they haven't even actually worked on trying to go to the insights that are behind a lot of the activities that we encounter daily. And if people could just ease back and slow down a little bit. But what was done in Northern Exposure, it is very accurate to the real events. And in fact, with Graham Greene involved, I'm sure that those were inspired through some of his stories.
I'm sure they were too. Let's go to Portland, Oregon. Hey, Dust, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I'm going to say something pretty fast. I come from a large family across many nations. One of my names is Many Nations, because we have so many different nations. But we also have some very good people, power people amongst all those numbers. And anyway, I want to just send out four powers for the future, because we do have a lot of fear in our hearts, which is increasing. But these are important fear. These are important powers. And the first power, and I wish this to be taken seriously, the first power, which is quite significant, is birth control. Birth control is extremely important. People can have control for their lives and for their children. It's something that can be used. Another power, this sounds silly too maybe, bicycles. Bicycles are very important. They do help. They help the planet breathe. They help you breathe. Another power is beauty. Look around. Find the beauty around you. Treasure it. Beauty above you. Beauty below you. Beauty all around you. Bring more beauty. And then the last one, which you could also help with, Mr. Norrie, is bond. Bond, bond, particularly with the old, particularly with the young. Also our animal friends. Bond with them. And also, Mr. Nora, you might want to start like a singles club for followers of Coast to Coast. I think that there are many people out there that enjoy your show, and they might like to meet one another. So that's the end of my ideas.
And I think old Glynis McCants is working on something like that, the numbers lady. So she may be doing that. And I'll go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, those are all very good issues and good points that she's brought up, because when we start to look at the finer points and we start to see that it really does rely on our involvement, we are not supposed to sit back and just go along for the ride. We're supposed to participate with this life. And as we interact and we participate, we will even learn the higher teachings. This is, I'll tell you, in the few years when I first started hanging around and traveling with the elders, I learned more in those first few years than I have in any of the schooling that I've ever had. And they teach you in such a way that they allow you to make the discoveries. When you lead people to a certain point and then you let them continue making the discoveries, those are the lessons. Those are the things that stick with them forever, because those are the things that they go, wow, I accomplished something with a little assistance, but they actually get involved and they rise up to the challenges that we are facing right now.
Michael, how did Mad Bear influence you?
Oh, man. Well, you know, Mad Bear's approach to almost any issue, any experience in this life, and I have never met anyone that even comes close to Mad Bear. Mad Bear was a very direct, get involved with whatever the issue may be. And what he showed me is that if you enter into these elements calmly and assertively, that energy actually surrounds you, and you can, believe it or not, Have a little faith in yourself. You can actually do things that you would think that you weren't capable of doing. But over the years, the influences that I look back at from Mad Bear have continuously resurfaced and assisted me to never throw the towel in, don't ever give up. You can get frustrated. You don't need to get angry. I think anger just clouds and it disturbs and it interrupts the focus that we need to hold on to get through those difficult times. So a lot of his experience of just the influence of being around someone like Mad Bear has just been an incredible help to see that work and then align yourself with it, and you become a part of how to interact with the difficulties of this life.
Let's go to Sioux City, Iowa. Jane Lynn is with us. Hi there.
Say, this is an interesting program. I was wondering if your guest would be able to explain to me what I saw about 4 years ago.
We'll try.
I let my dog outside in the morning, and she was running around in the backyard, and I noticed something up in the tree. And it looked like a cross between a squirrel and a fox, but it wasn't real solid. You know, it just wasn't real solid, but I saw it sitting there.
Like ghostly looking?
Well, a shadow-like in a way.
All right.
It was sitting in the tree limb with his tail wagging and watching my dog, you know, amusingly watching my dog running around. And I'm going like, what is this? Am I seeing what I'm seeing? So I walked outside, went around the tree and reached out to it and just poofed, disappeared.
Like in a puff of smoke, gone.
Not a puff of smoke, but it just, boof, it was gone.
All right. What was that, Michael?
That's a great experience. I'm getting a few insights to it. It seems as if there are visitors that come in, and they are a part of what that term that they call shape-shifting. And they come in to observe, to see how, and maybe in the particular area in which you're in, how life is going. And so you are a direct contact. And when you decided to walk over to it, most people wouldn't do that. Most people would look at it, and if they were unfamiliar with it, they wouldn't want to go too close. But by you going close and not exhibiting fear, these things get a good feel for how life is being lived. It's a demonstration of living in a balanced way, of going beyond where we live and what we do. Going beyond is one of the things that this cosmos is trying to encourage for all of the humans, to go beyond the point of what we get comfortable with status quo and just wanting to observe average stuff. But when you experience things like this, those are special events, and they're for you. It's also for you to share with others. So I thank you for that.
Michael, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, of course, we'll have those special Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. When we come right back with Michael Bastine, let's take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Michael, does the Iroquois, do they have stories of thunderbirds, those large birds?
They do. That seems to be a common subject that is known amongst all of the native peoples. And I'm thinking that they were so prevalent and so common that it became a part of their record keeping. It became a part of the life. And I think that they started to recognize these beings, or sometimes they refer to them as the thunder beings, as part of the elements that we were to acknowledge. And that's why they have legends that explain to them that if they don't continue to make acknowledgments, that many things go away. It may also be a part of when the world changes occur, that some of the life doesn't evolve or doesn't change its vibration to the compatible level that it will continue to exist as we know it in this physical form.
Okay, let's go to final calls now. Let's go to Ziad in Puyallup, Washington. There you go, Ziad. Go ahead.
Hello, Jory. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just got a quick question. What do you think of the whole human being and people seeing things like Bigfoot, you know, the Big Bird and all that? Do you think it's an experimental thing that just went wrong?
No, I don't think in those places and in those terms. When we see objects like the stone objects that are in Egypt, I think those are interactive things, and they may not have been done by humans on this planet. They may have been a part of interacting with civilizations outside of our solar system.
Okay, thank you. Let's go next to Jerry, Springfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
Hi, George, Mike. I just want to tell you this is verification of what you're talking about with the stone men. Back 15 years ago, I picked up the book by Buffalo Bill Cody, one of the great heroes in the West. And he was in the, you know, he was in the plains. He did a lot of hunting with buffalo and whatnot, and very, very friendly with the Indian, Plain Indians. And one night or one day, I think it was the Indians came over with a wagon with this tremendous bone in it, a real big thigh bone. And he says, you know, what's that from? So the Indians explain that eons ago, there was a legend that eons and eons ago, there was these Indians, an Indian that was so big that had the bone in him, you know, the tremendous bone. He was so big that he could pick up a buffalo and run with it under his arm. So that gives verification to what you're talking about, right in the printed page.
Yeah, it has been recorded, and there have been widespread notations of this, and that's when we do understand when it gets explained by other than one source, when we see it in many places, then we know that these things existed, and we know that we need to look at that. There's a reason for this information to come into our lives and for us to look at it. It actually helps us open and become more insightful. And that's the key to assisting all of this life to get prepared for what we're about to experience. And actually, it's not an all bad thing. It really is for our whole benefit that the Earth and the cosmos and all the components that are in our solar system, they're actually working in an effort to make us higher functioning beings.
Let's go to Daniel now in Monroe, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Daniel. You're on with us.
Yeah. I wanted to ask your guest, see, I'm a practicing druid. I have been one for about 2 years now. And before that, I was practicing pagan for about 10 years, neo-pagan. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask your guest what his opinion is of neo-paganism in general and what the basic shaman, your average shaman's opinion would be of neo-paganism.
Yes, paganism is a term which has been applied to people who don't conform to a lot of the religions that follow certain other doctrines. And basically, it is a nature-based function or belief. And when you go nature-based, it really does give you the feeling and the understanding that this creation was designed and designated for us to observe on a daily basis. And when we look at the intricate parts of this creation, we see that there are cycles of alignment, there are cycles of seasons, and when you break the cycles down, we start to see that these were designed to show us that we are to interact with and prepare for these changes. So you can do it on a smaller scale, It's like changing of seasons. When we start heading into another season, we make preparations. So when you apply that to the bigger cycles, to the bigger changes, we need to reconnect with, are the forces and the elements that are being provided to us actually being used the way they were intended to be?
Michael, tell us about sacred sites. Why are they sacred?
Well, sacred sites are places which demonstrate to have an enhancement of when you do a ceremony, when you want to interact with other life forces. These places, I guess you can also refer to them as vortexes or vortices, mm-hmm. or you can actually feel, people who are sensitive enough will actually feel a change in that experience when they get into those places. And they're actually designed not only to be rejuvenating, but people have said that they've witnessed deer and other animals will actually congregate in these places, and they seem to really enjoy being in that spot. And when you enter into it, it's designed to help us not only feel better, but it's designed for us to improve how we are interacting and how we can help other people go to sacred sites. And when you do these ceremonies, they actually do become enhanced.
Okay, who's up next? We go to John, Bronx, New York. Hey, John, thanks for calling. Hi.
How are you, George?
Good.
Hello, Michael. Hi, how are you? It's a pleasure to speak to you. I wanted to ask a question about the Sundance ritual. I have a friend who's half Navajo and Hopi, and she has expressed her desire in the future to participate in the Sundance ritual. Now, I wanted to ask, what benefits does the Sundance ritual bestow upon the participant, and what are the risks, if any, involved?
Well, those are interesting questions. The Sundance ritual is not typically one of the East Coast. I am familiar, and I do have friends that do participate with the Sundance. The Sundance is a designation when people have reached a certain stage in life and they want to commit to doing some activity, some ceremony that they want to, because when you do a Sundance, these are not things taken lightly, and they actually expect you to follow up and stay involved with basically for the rest of your life. So when people start to look at this, and if they're non-Native, I do know of a few instances where non-Natives have participated with the Sundance. In the Sundance, it's actually using yourself as a sacrifice. It's not to sacrifice your life, but you're using the physical part of our existence, that sometimes we go through suffering, but the suffering that you bring into your life can be offered instead of something like sacred tobacco, cornmeal, sweet grass, sage, but you can actually, people will use their body, and this is what is understood to be of the highest offering. It's not like you're saying here, sacrifice me on an altar, but you are interacting with a really difficult experience, and you really do go through a lot of difficult times. I'm going to say it is, in a sense, very trying for a lot of people to go through the Sundance, because most people will start at an event that is not as difficult to do. Sweat lodges are a part of ceremony, and I wouldn't recommend most people to go out and to try a Sundance, because it really is going to the highest level of offering yourself as part of a sacrifice.
We haven't talked too much about little people. What are they?
Well, little people are a real interesting part of this creation. They are beings that were put here. They're powerful. They're really powerful beings. I'm going to say that they're other on the other end of the spectrum from the stone giants, from the Sasquatch or Bigfoot. But these beings are trickier. They like to play with people. They typically like children, and they are expressly involved with interacting with nature. They really enjoy all of these little insights that most humans don't get to see because they're in a smaller part of life. Like when we talk about microbes, those are still tiny particles of the physical. But these little people, and they're everywhere. All cultures seem to have them. They've been referred to in some as fairies. I know the Irish, most people understand that to be a leprechaun. But they exist throughout the planet. And they're actually here to assist us when we really need some help. This is help that comes from not so much of a divine order, but it is, these are, in a sense, beings that can dematerialize and rematerialize, and they seem to be able to use their abilities to come in and out of focus. Some people actually see them in the sense of some may view them as like shadow people, but these are actual humans. And at one point in Mad Bear's life, he pulled out a little bundle. And when he opened it up, he showed me a human skull that was about the size of an appliance light bulb. And it had the full set of teeth. And he said this was found in central New York in the 1800s. He said when they were excavating and putting in one of the canals, he said they found this, and it was handed down through the Iroquois people, and Mad Bear actually had that. And he says, we do use this on rare occasions in ceremonies. He said, we are acknowledging that these are a part of this life. We're not afraid of them. But he said, we don't want to ignore the parts of this life that we know we need to include and acknowledge and participate with.
Michael, before we take final calls, tell us about where people can get your book, Iroquois Supernatural.
Yeah, it's on Amazon, and it can also be purchased through Inner Traditions. It's Bear & Company. They also do have not only a website, but if people wanted to make contact to me or for me, they can do it at author@innertraditions.com. And they will forward. I'm kind of in a primitive lifestyle here intentionally. I like the privacy and I like living the style I have. But the book is available and you can make contact through that. And there was one other little piece I would like to add.
Go ahead.
At www.peacevillageelders.com, that is a place where there is a video that you can actually purchase, and it has myself and many other elders that participated over a number of years in Vermont. And you can see actual demonstrations and hear different, it's got diversity, so it has different perspectives. But we all have the same goal. We have the same desire to share information with people so that they can help themselves and join with us in making this a better life.
Good for you. Let's go to Russ now, Boston, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi, Russ.
I was wondering what Michael thought about the ritual use of tobacco in the Native Americans. And is it the same thing as the ritual use of ayahuasca in the Amazon natives? Do they use it to unlock or aid knowledge?
Well, I've participated with ayahuasca. We had some friends of ours from the Peruvian jungle come up to North America, and it is not like ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is closer to the peyote ceremonies, and what those things are to help people with is when you reach a certain level of understanding and you reach a certain level of insight, this takes you one more step. And it does have this altering effect. But if you are in the right mind, you will be able to use that to take you to another level. So this tobacco it has been used and inhaled, but typically not, because they don't want this particular tobacco is so strong that it'll actually make you sick if you inhale it. But people have used it that way, and it's another type of an offering or, in a sense, a sacrifice if you do inhale it, because it is not pleasant. But it does have these great effects when you involve tobacco. We use it routinely to assist with healings, to ask for insight, to give us information that we need to retrieve so that it can fit into helping others move up to this next level.
Well, I always thought that there was a reason for it. Michael, thank you so much for being on the program. And he's a great guest, and learned a lot from you tonight. Sure did. Don't forget our next program, Friday night into Saturday morning, Open Lines. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Tim Banal, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.